This is Audible.
Blackstone Publishing presents The Brightest Stars by Anna Todd. This book is read by Brooke Bloomingdale. To Hugues de Saint-Vincent, I hope you can feel the passion in this book, and I continue to make you proud. I miss you terribly, and I will try to drink more red wine just for you. R.I.P. Chapter 1. Karina, 2019. The wind whips around the coffee shop each time the old wooden door creaks open. It's unusually cold for September, and I'm pretty sure it's some kind of punishment from the universe for agreeing to meet up with him. Today of all days. What was I thinking? I barely had time to put makeup over the swollen pockets under my eyes, and this outfit I'm wearing? When was the last time it saw the wash? Again, what was I thinking? Right now, I'm thinking that my head aches, and I'm not sure if I have any ibuprofen in my purse. I'm also thinking that it was smart of me to choose the table closest to the door so I can get away quickly if I need to. This place in the middle of Edgewood? Neutral and not the least bit romantic. Another good choice. I've only been here a few times, but it's my favorite coffee house in Atlanta. The seating is pretty limited, just 10 tables, so I guess they want to encourage a quick turnaround. There are a couple of Instagram-worthy features, like the succulent wall and that clean black-and-white tile behind the baristas, but overall it's quite severe. Harsh gray and concrete everywhere. Loud blenders mixing kale and whatever fruit is trendy at the moment. There is a single creaky door. One way in, one way out. I look down at my phone and wipe my palms on my black dress. Will he hug me? Shake my hand? I can't imagine such a formal gesture. Not from him. Damn, I'm working myself up again and he isn't even here yet. For about the fourth time today, I can feel the panic bubbling just below my chest, and it dawns on me that every time I imagine our reunion, I see him the way I did the very first time I laid eyes on him. I have no idea which version of him I'll get. I haven't seen him since last winter, and I have no idea who he is anymore. And really, did I ever know? Maybe I only ever knew a version of him, a bright and hollow form of the man I'm waiting on now. I suppose I could have avoided him for the rest of my life, but the thought of never seeing him again seems worse than sitting here now. At least I can admit that. Here I am warming my hands on a coffee cup, waiting for him to come through that raspy door after swearing to him, to myself, to anyone who would listen for the last few months that I would never... He's not due for another 5 minutes. But if he's anything like the man I remember, he'll strut in late with that scowl on his face. When the door tears open, it's a woman who walks in. Her blonde hair is a nest stuck to the top of her tiny head, and she's holding a cell phone against her red cheek.
I don't give a shit how we get it done,
she snaps, pulling the phone away with a string of curse words. I hate Atlanta. The people here are all like her, tetchy and forever in a hurry. It wasn't always like this. Well, maybe it was. I wasn't, though. But things change. I used to love this city, especially downtown. The dining options are out of this world, and for a foodie living in a small town, well, that alone was reason enough to move here. There's always something to do in Atlanta, and everything is open later than it is around Fort Benning. But the biggest draw for me at the time was that I wasn't constantly reminded of military life. No camo everywhere you look. No ACUs on the men and women waiting in line for the movies, at the gas station, at Dunkin' Donuts. People speak real words, not just acronyms. And there are plenty of non-military haircuts to admire. I loved Atlanta. But he changed that. We changed that. We. That was the closest I'd get to admitting any blame in what went down. Chapter 2. You're staring. Just a couple of words, but they pour into and over me, shocking every one of my senses and all of my sense. And yet, there's that calm, too. The one that seems to be hardwired into me whenever he's around. I look up to make sure it's him, though I know it is. Sure enough, he's standing over me with his hickory eyes on my face, searching, reminiscing. I wish he wouldn't look at me like that. The small room is actually pretty packed, but it doesn't feel that way. I'd had this meeting all scripted, but he's disrupted everything and now I'm unnerved. How do you do that? I ask him. I didn't see you come in. I worry my voice sounds like I'm accusing him of something or that I'm nervous, and that's the last thing I want. But still, I wonder, how does he do that? He was always so good at silence, at moving around undetected. Another skill honed in the army, I guess. I gesture for him to sit down. He slides into the chair, and that's when I realize he has a full beard. Sharp, precise lines graze his cheekbones, and his jawline is covered in dark hair. This is new. Of course it is. He always had to keep up with regulations. Hair must be short and well-groomed. Mustaches are allowed, but only if they're neatly trimmed and don't grow over the upper lip. He told me once that he was thinking of growing a mustache, but I talked him out of it. Even with a face like his, a mustache would look creepy. He grabs the coffee menu from the table. Cappuccino, macchiato, latte, flat white, long black. When did everything get so complicated? You like coffee now? I don't try to hide my surprise. He shakes his head. No. A half smile crosses his stoic face, reminding me of the very reason I fell in love with him. A moment ago, it was easy to look away. Now it's impossible.
Not coffee, he assures me. Tea.
He isn't wearing a jacket, of course, and the sleeves of his denim shirt are rolled up above his elbows. The tattoo on his forearm peeks through, and I know if I touch his skin right now, it will be burning up. I'm sure as hell not going to do that. So I look up and over his shoulder. Away from the tattoo. Away from the thought. It's safer that way. For both of us. I try to focus on the noises in the coffee shop so I can settle into his silence. I forgot how unnerving his presence can be. That's a lie, I didn't forget. I wanted to, but couldn't. I can hear the server approaching, her sneakers squeaking on the concrete floor. She has a mousy little voice, and when she tells him that he should so totally try the new peppermint mocha, I laugh, knowing that he hates all minty things, even toothpaste. I think about the way he'd leave those red globs of cinnamon gunk in the sink at my house, and how many times we bickered over it. If only I had ignored those petty grievances. If only I had paid more attention to what was really happening. Everything might have been different. Maybe. Maybe not. I'm the kind of person who would take the blame for anything. Except this. I can't be sure. I don't want to know. Another lie. Kale tells the girl he would like a plain black tea, and this time I try not to laugh. He's so predictable.
What's so funny?
He asks when the waitress leaves. Nothing. I change the subject. So, how are you? I don't know what bullshit we're going to fill this coffee date with. What I do know is that we're going to see each other tomorrow. But since I had to be in the city today anyway, it had seemed like a good idea to get the first awkward encounter out of the way without an audience. A funeral is no place for that.
Good. Given the circumstances?
He clears his throat. Yeah. I sigh, trying not to think too much about tomorrow. I've always been good at pretending the world isn't burning around me. Okay, I've been slipping these past few months, but for years it was second nature, something I'd started doing sometime between my parents' divorce and my high school graduation. Sometimes I feel like my family is disappearing. We keep getting smaller and smaller.
Are you all right?
He asks, his voice even lower than before. I could hear it the same way I did those damp nights when we fell asleep with the window open. The whole room would be dewy the next morning, our bodies wet and sticky. I used to love the way his hot skin felt when my fingertips danced across the smooth contours of his jaw. Even his lips were warm, feverish at times. The southern Georgia air was so thick you could taste it, and Kale's temperature always ran so hot.
Hmph.
He clears his throat and I snap out of it. I know what he's thinking. I can read his face as clearly as the neon, but first coffee sign hanging on the wall behind him. I hate that those memories are the ones my brain associates with him. It doesn't make this any easier.
Care.
His voice is soft as he reaches across the table to touch my hand. I jerk it away so fast you'd think it was on fire. It's strange to think about the way we were, the way I never knew where he ended and I began. We were so in tune, so, just so different than the way things are now. There was a time when he'd say my name and just like that, I'd give him anything he wanted. I consider this for a moment, how I'd give that man anything he wanted. I thought I was further in my recovery of us, that whole getting over him thing. At least far enough along that I wouldn't be thinking about the way his voice sounded when I had to wake him up early for physical training, or the way he used to scream in the night. My head is starting to spin, and if I don't shut my mind off now, the memories will split me apart, on this chair in this little shop right in front of him. I force myself to nod and pick up my latte to buy some time. Just a moment so I can find my voice. Yeah, I mean, funerals are kind of my thing. I don't dare look at his face.
There's nothing you could have done, regardless. Don't tell me you're thinking you could have.
He pauses and I stare harder at the small chip in my mug. I run my finger over the cracked ceramic.
Karina, look at me.
I shake my head. Not even close to jumping down this rabbit hole with him. I don't have it in me. I'm fine, seriously. I pause and take in the expression on his face. Don't look at me like that, I'm okay.
You're always fine.
He runs his hand over the hair on his face and sighs, his shoulders leaning into the back of the plastic chair. It isn't so much a question or a statement, just the way it is. He's right. I will always be fine. That whole fake it till you make it thing, I own it. What other choice do I have? Chapter 3. Karina, 2017. I had hit the job jackpot. I didn't have to open the massage parlor until 10, so most mornings I could sleep in. And being able to walk there from my house at the end of the street, bonus. I loved the street. The mattress shop, the ice cream place, the nail salon, and the old-fashioned candy store. I'd saved up my money and there I was, 20 years old on my own street in my own tiny house. My house. Not my dad's. Mine. The walk to work was only 5 minutes. Not long enough to be interesting. Mostly I just tried to stay out of the way of the cars. The alley was wide enough for one pedestrian and one car at a time. Well, a Prius or some kind of small car would be an easy fit. Unfortunately, people around here usually went for big trucks, so most of the time I pinned myself up against the trees, lining the alleyway until they passed. Sometimes I'd create stories in my head, a little bit of excitement before my shift started. That day's story featured Bradley, the bearded man who owned the mattress store on the corner. Bradley was a nice guy, and he wore what I came to think of as his nice guy uniform, a plaid shirt and khakis. He drove a white Ford something or other, and he worked even more than I did. I passed him every morning, already at his shop before I started at 10. Even when I worked a double or a night shift, I'd see that white truck parked in the back of the alley. Bradley had to be single, not because he wasn't sweet or cute, but because he was always alone. If he had a wife or children, surely I'd have seen them at least once in the 6 months since I'd moved to this side of town. But no. It didn't matter if it was during the day, at night, or on the weekends. Bradley was always alone. The sun was shining, but not a single bird was chirping. No garbage truck was grumbling. Not one person was starting their car. It was eerily silent. Maybe that's why Bradley seemed a little more sinister that morning. I looked at him anew and wondered why he combed his white blonde hair down the middle, why he thought it was a good idea to expose such a harsh line of scalp. Really, what I wanted to know was where he was going with that rolled-up rug in the back of his truck. Maybe I'd seen one too many episodes of CSI, but doesn't everyone know that's how you dispose of a body? Roll it up in some old carpet and dump it on the edge of town? Just as my imagination was turning Bradley into a serial killer, he gave me the friendliest wave and a smile. A real one. Or maybe he was just that good at being charming and was actually going to... I nearly peed myself when he called out to me.
Hey, Karina! Water's out in the whole strip!
His thin lips turned into a heavy frown as he waved his arms around to show how upset he was. I stopped walking and lifted my hand to cover my eyes from the sun. It was harsh, shining its brightest, even though the air had a little bite to it. Georgia was just so hot. I thought I'd be used to it after a year, but nope. I longed for the cold of those Northern California nights.
I've been trying to get the water company out here, but no luck so far.
He shrugged his shoulders and held up his cell phone as proof. Oh no. I tried to mimic his tone of frustration over the water, but honestly, I kind of hoped Molly would shut down for the day. I had barely slept last night, so I could have used another hour, or 20 of sleep.
I'll keep trying to call them,
he offered. His fingers reached down and touched his Longhorn belt buckle. He looked like he was already sweating, and when he grabbed the massive rug from the bed of his truck, I almost wanted to help him.
Thanks, I said. I'll let Molly know.
Chapter 4. The door was locked. The lights were off. Even the hallway light that we usually kept on. And it was freezing inside. I turned on the oil warmers and lit the candles in the lobby and in two of the rooms. My first client wasn't until 10:30. Elodie's wasn't scheduled until 11:30. She was still snoring when I left the house, which meant she'd rush through the door at 10 past 11 and give her client a sweet smile and a quick apology in that cute little French accent of hers. Then she'd be on with her day. Elodie was one of the few people in the world I'd do most anything for. That was especially true now that she was pregnant. She'd found out about the baby just 2 days after her husband's boots hit the dirt in Afghanistan. That kind of stuff was the norm around here. I saw it with my parents, with Elodie. Pretty much everyone around these posts knew it was a possibility. Not just a possibility, more like the reality when you were married to the military. I shook the thought off. I needed some music in here. I hated silence. I had recently convinced Molly to let me play more relevant music over the speakers while we worked. I couldn't handle another shift of relaxing spa tunes on repeat for hours. The sleepy sounds of waterfalls and waves got on my nerves like no other. Made me drowsy, too. I turned on the iPad, and within seconds, Banks was washing away the memory of all that soft, dreamy babble. I walked to the front desk to switch the computer on. Not 2 minutes later, Molly came in with a couple of big tote bags hanging from her little arms.
What's wrong?
She asked as I took the bags from her. Nothing. No, hi. No, how's it going, Karina? I laughed and made my way to the back room. The food in those bags smelled so good. Molly made the best homemade Thai food I'd ever tasted, and she always made extra for Elodie and me. She graced us with it at least 5 days a week. The little avocado, that's what Elodie called her baby bump, only wanted spicy drunken noodles. It was the basil leaves. Elodie had become obsessed with them since getting pregnant, to the point where she'd pick them out of her noodles and chew on them. Babies made you do the strangest things.
Karina, Molly said, smiling. How are you? You look sad.
That was Molly for you. What's wrong? You look sad. If it was on her mind, it came out of her mouth. Hey, I'm fine, I said. I'm just not wearing makeup. I rolled my eyes and she poked my cheek.
That's not it, she said.
No, that wasn't. But I wasn't sad, and I didn't like that my mask had slipped enough for Molly to notice. I didn't like it one bit. Chapter 5. 10:30 came and my client was right on time. I was used to his punctuality, not to mention his soft skin. I could tell he used oil after his showers, and that made my job easier, massaging already soft skin. His muscles were always so tight, especially around his shoulders, so I assumed he sat behind a desk all day. He wasn't military. I gathered that by his longer hair, curling at the tips. Today his shoulders were so tense that my fingers hurt a little when they rubbed the patch of tissue at the top of his shoulders. He was a groaner. a lot of clients were, and he made these deep, throaty sounds when I loosened the knots he held in his body. The hour went fast. I had to tap his shoulder to wake him when it was over. My 10:30 client, his name was Toby, but I like to call him 10:30, was a good tipper and kept things simple. Except for that time he asked me out. Aility freaked when I told her. She wanted me to tell Molly, but I didn't want it to become a thing when it didn't need to be. He was fine with my rejection. Unusual with men, I know. Anyway, he hadn't even so much as hinted at any attraction toward me since, so I figured things were okay between us. 11:45, and there was still no Aility. Usually she'd text if she was going to be more than 15 minutes late. The man in the waiting area must have been new, because I didn't recognize him and I never forgot a face. He seemed patient enough. Not Molly, though. She was 2 minutes away from calling Aility. I can take him if she's not here in 5 minutes. My next client can be moved an hour later. It's Tina, I told Molly. She knew most of the patrons who came in and out of her salon. She remembered names like I did faces.
Fine, fine, but your friend is always late, she scolded.
Molly was the nicest woman, but made of pure fire. She's pregnant, I said, defending my friend. Molly rolled her eyes.
I have 5 children and I worked just fine.
Touché. I kept my laughter quiet and texted Tina to see if she could come in at 1. She immediately responded with a yes, like I knew she would.
Sir?
I called to the man in the waiting room. Your therapist is actually running late. I can start you now if you'd like. Or you could wait for Aility. I didn't know if he was partial to her for some reason, or if he just wanted a massage. Now that we were on Yelp and booking online appointments, I never knew which clients wanted a specific therapist. He stood up and walked to the desk without saying a word. Is that okay? I asked. He hesitated for a second before he nodded. Okay. All right. I looked at the schedule. Kale. What a strange name. Follow me, please. We didn't have assigned rooms, not technically, but I had fixed up the second room on the left to perfectly fit my taste, so that was the one I used the most. No one else took it unless they had to. I had brought in my own cabinet, my own decorations, and was in the process of convincing Molly to let me paint the walls. Anything would be better than this dark purple color. It wasn't exactly relaxing. Plus, it was dull and dated the room by about 20 years. You can leave your clothes on the hanger or the chair, I told him. Go ahead and strip down to however you're comfortable. Lie face down on the table and I'll be back in 2 minutes. The client didn't say a word. He just stood next to the chair and lifted his gray t-shirt over his head. He was definitely military. Between his solid build and his nearly shaved head, he screamed, soldier. I grew up inside army posts my entire life, so I knew. He folded his shirt and set it down on the chair. When his fingers tugged at his athletic pants, I left him alone to undress. Chapter 6. I pulled my phone out of my scrub pocket and read the first line of a text from my dad. See you tonight. Estelle is making one of her best recipes. I could name at least 1,000 things I'd rather do. But this is what the 3 of us, sometimes 4, did every single Tuesday. I'd missed only 1 family dinner since moving out a year ago, and that was when my dad drove Estelle in our family RV to the boot camp graduation of some distant relative. So technically, I guess I wasn't the one who missed it. They still had it, on their little family vacay, while Aility and I shoved our faces with dominoes. I didn't respond to my dad because he knew I'd be there at 7. My new mom would be in the bathroom curling her hair and dinner wouldn't be started, but I'd be there on time, like I always was. It had been 3 minutes since I told Aility's client I'd be back to start his treatment, so I pulled back the curtain and walked into the room. The lights were dimmed, so everything was a shade of purple from the hideous walls. The candles had been burning long enough for the air to take on the clean smell of lemongrass. Even after my restless night, this room had the power to calm me. He was on the table in the center of the room, with the white blanket pulled up to his waist. I rubbed my hands together. My fingertips were still too cold to touch someone's skin, so I walked over to the sink to warm them. I turned on the faucet. Nothing. I had already forgotten Bradley's warning, and for the last hour I'd managed without water. I rubbed my hands together and wrapped them around the oil warmer on the edge of the sink. It was a little too hot, but it did the trick. The oil would be warm on his skin, and he probably wouldn't notice that the water wasn't working. It wasn't convenient, but it was manageable. I hoped that whoever worked the closing shift put clean towels in the warmer last night before they left. "Do you have any specific areas of concern or tension that you'd like me to focus on?" I asked. No answer. Had he already fallen asleep? I waited a few beats before I asked again. He shook his shaved head in the face cradle and said,
"Don't touch my right leg. Please."
He added the please at the end as an afterthought. I had requests from people all the time not to touch certain parts of their bodies. They had all kinds of reasons, from medical conditions to insecurities. It wasn't my business to ask. My business was to make the client feel better and provide a healing experience. It seemed like every time I didn't have them fill out a treatment card, they had a special request. Molly would scold me over this for sure. "Will do. Would you like light, medium, or intense pressure?" I asked, grabbing the little bottle of oil off the cabinet shelf. The outside of the bottle was still really hot, but I knew it would be the perfect temperature when it hit his skin. Again, no answer. Maybe he was hard of hearing. I was used to this as well. One of the rougher things about army life. "Kale?" I said his name, though I didn't know why. His head popped up so quickly I thought I frightened him. I jumped a little myself. "Sorry, I just wanted to know what level of pressure you wanted."
"Any?"
He didn't sound like he knew what he wanted. Probably a first-timer. He put his head back into the cradle. "Okay, just tell me if the pressure is too light or too firm and I'll adjust my touch," I told him. I could be a little heavy-handed and most of my clients liked that, but I'd never worked on this guy before. Who knew if he'd ever come back? I'd say only about 4 out of 10 first-timers actually returned, and only 1 or 2 became regulars. We weren't a big salon, but we had a steady clientele. "This is peppermint oil." I dotted the little bottle against my forefinger. "I'm going to rub some into your temples. It helps with..." He lifted his head up, lightly shaking it.
"No,"
he said. His voice wasn't harsh, but it let me know he absolutely did not want me to use peppermint oil. "Okay. Okay." I screwed the lid back on the bottle and turned the faucet. Damn it. The water. I knelt down and opened the towel warmer. Empty. Of course it was. Just a second, I told him. He laid his head back into the cradle and I shut the warmer door a little too hard. I hoped he didn't hear it over the music. This wasn't turning out to be the smoothest session. Chapter 7. Molly was in the hallway when I pushed through the thin curtain to search for towels. "I need water, or warm towels." She put her fingers to her lips to tell me to hush.
"There's no water. I have towels. Who didn't stock?"
I shrugged. I didn't know and didn't really care. I just wanted a towel.
"He's been in my room for 5 minutes and I haven't started yet."
At that, she moved faster, disappearing into the room across the hall and popping back up with a few hot towels. I grabbed them from her, shifting the steaming bundles from palm to cool them off. When I got back into the room, I waved the towel through the air one last time and rubbed it across the bottom of his bare feet. His skin was so hot to the touch that I pulled the towel away and touched the back of my hand to the top of his foot to make sure he didn't have a fever or anything. I couldn't afford to be sick. Literally. The days on my dad's TRICARE were coming to an end, and I couldn't afford health insurance on my own. His skin felt so hot. I lifted the blanket a little and realized he was still wearing his pants. That was just strange. I didn't know how I was going to rub his other leg, the one I was supposed to massage.
"Did you want me to avoid your legs altogether?"
I quietly asked him. He nodded his head in the cradle. I continued to run the hot towel across the bottoms of his feet, something I did to clean off any oil and dirt. The hygiene of clients, well, Let's just say it varied. Some people came in wearing sandals after walking around all day. Not this guy, though. He must have showered before he came in. I appreciated that. These were the things you thought about as a masseuse. I started on the balls of his feet, applying pressure there and moving to the arch of his left foot. There was a soft, bubbly line across the bottom of his left foot, but I couldn't see the scar in the dark. I slid my thumb slowly along the arch and he jerked a little. I was used to timing my hour sessions perfectly, about 5 minutes per leg, so I took the extra time to work on his shoulders. A lot of people carry tension in their shoulders, but this guy, if these weren't the stiffest shoulders I'd ever worked on, they sure came close. I had to stop myself from making up a story about his life. I continued, keeping his legs covered by the blanket and working on his neck, his shoulders, his back. His muscles were defined, but not bulky or hard under my moving fingers. I imagined his young body had been carrying the weight of something for a long time. A rucksack, maybe, or just life itself. He didn't express enough of himself for me to make up a life for him the way I did with Bradley and most of the other strangers around me. There was something about this guy that kept my imagination at bay. His scalp was the last part I worked on. The soft pressure release usually made people moan or at least sigh, but nothing came from his lips. He didn't make a peep. I thought maybe he'd fallen asleep. That happened often, and I loved it when it did. It meant I did a good job. When the time was up, I felt like it had just started. I usually drifted in and out of thought. My dad, my brother, work, my house. But there was something about working on this guy. I came up with nothing. Thank you, was everything okay? Sometimes I asked, sometimes I didn't. This guy was so quiet that I wasn't sure if he'd enjoyed it or not. He kept his face in the cradle, so I barely heard him when he said,
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, well, I'm going to step out and let you get dressed. I'll see you in the lobby when you're finished. Take your time. He nodded and I left the room, pretty sure I wouldn't be getting a tip. Chapter 8. I heard Elodie in the lobby. She was talking to Molly, who was giving her a hard time for being late. I took your client. He's dressing now, I told my friend. It didn't hurt to let Molly know that everything was covered. No harm done. Elodie smiled at me and tilted her head to the side. She had this thing about where she could get away with just about anything.
I'm so sorry, Karina. Thank you.
She kissed both of my cheeks. That was something I got used to the first week she moved in. I wasn't really fond of excess touching, but with her, it was hard to recoil the way I normally would.
I couldn't fall asleep last night. The avocado started kicking.
Her smile grew wide, but I could tell by her eyes that she wasn't rested. I could relate. Molly put her hand on Elodie's stomach and started talking to the baby. I half expected her to ask the bump, What's wrong? Why aren't you smiling? But Molly was soft and kind around children, even the ones who hadn't been born yet. It made me a little uncomfortable, the way she was touching Elodie like that. But the idea of the baby kicking was exciting, so I smiled. I really was happy for my friend. It worried me that she was so alone here, with her family and most of her friends across the Atlantic Ocean. She was young. So young. I wondered if she'd had the chance to tell Philip that she thought she felt the baby move yesterday, or if he would even get to check his email today. The time zones made it so hard for them to talk as often as Elodie or anyone with a soldier in their life would want, but she was handling it with grace, as she did everything. It scared the hell out of me, though, the fact that she was going to have a baby in a few months. Elodie's eyes snapped to the curtain behind me, and she lit up like a Christmas tree, pushing past me to the client. She said a name that I couldn't hear completely, but it didn't sound anything like Kale. She double-kissed his cheeks and hugged him.
You're here! I can't believe you're here. How did you know?
She squealed and hugged him again. Molly nodded to my next client who was walking through the front door.
Back to work for you, she said.
Chapter 9. Tina was one of my favorite clients. She worked from home as a family therapist, and more than once let me use her massage session as my therapy. I wasn't open with too many people, but Tina had no one to tell my secrets to. It made me sad for her, though, thinking about how lonely she must be in her big, empty house, eating dinner alone in front of the TV. Then again, that's what my life consisted of, so I guess I shouldn't feel too sad for her. I felt slightly guilty about the way a strike of fear slapped against me. Was Tina's life my future? Today's session with her felt like it was never going to end. I checked the clock again. 10 minutes left.
So how are things with your brother?
She asked. I moved her hair to the side so I could focus on the tight muscles in her neck. Tina had recently cut her hair. The demi, she called it. But hated it and immediately started wearing hats to cover her dark strands. It still wasn't long enough to put into a ponytail. I didn't really want to talk about my brother. Actually, I didn't want to feel the way I would feel if we talked about my brother. The same? I've barely heard from him since he's been staying with my uncle. Who knows when he's coming back? I sighed, gliding my fingers down Tina's neckline.
Is he in school there yet?
She asked.
No. They keep saying they're going to sign him up, but haven't.
I tried not to think much about it, but my brain didn't work that way. Once I cracked the door open, the wood snapped off the hinges and everything rushed in.
It sounds like they don't plan on it, Tina said.
Yeah, I figured as much. He won't talk to me about it, and his scholarship to the community college expired last month. Little pokes of stress wrapped at my shoulders and down my spine. I understood that Austin couldn't bear to live with our dad any longer, but I was conflicted. He was my twin, 20 and headed nowhere. He shouldn't be living in the next state over with our 30-year-old uncle who smelled like Cheetos and watched online porn all day. But I also didn't want him to live in my house with me. It was complicated. I still couldn't believe my dad had let him leave in the first place. But I really couldn't blame my brother. Again, complicated.
Honestly, Karina, you can't take on full responsibility for this. It's not good for you, and at the end of the day, your brother is the same age as you. Or 5 minutes younger, if I remember.
6. I smiled and moved my hands down to her shoulder blades. I knew she was right, but that didn't make it any easier. I moved my hands along her skin, using a compression stroke.
You have to decide what's best for you, she said. You're starting a new chapter, and you should have the most decluttered life possible.
Easier said than done. I'll ask my dad if he's heard anything from him. Tina didn't say anything after that. She must have known that talking about the dinner with my family would be too much for me that early in the day, so she just enjoyed the rest of her treatment while my thoughts boiled inside my brain. Chapter 10. It was almost 6 when I finished for the day. I had 3 more clients after Tina, and each of them occupied my mind in different ways. Stuart, I called her by the last name stitched into her ACUs, was an army medic who had the most beautiful eyes I had ever seen. She kept me busy talking about her next post, about how, with her job, she could be stationed almost anywhere in the world, so being posted to Hawaii was like hitting the jackpot. It was nice to see her so happy. Some people love to move around in the military, and Stuart was one of them. She was only a year older than me, but she'd already been deployed to Iraq 2. And man, did she have stories. At 21, she'd had experiences most people couldn't dream of. But when those experiences turned into memories, well, they started playing through her mind on a constant loop. Never waning, never quiet, those memories became background noise that eventually took up residence in her head. Tolerable, but always there. I knew all about it. My dad's brain was full of that clamor. With 6 tours between Iraq and Afghanistan, his background noise blared throughout our house. His house. I thought about all of this while Stuart lay on my table. I was glad she could open up to me, that she could unburden herself by talking and releasing a bit of her background noise. I knew better than most that it wasn't just the physical aspect of massage that reduced stress, that helped a body come alive. It was almost poetry the way Stuart talked about her life. I felt every word when she spoke. I thought about things I tried hard not to. She connected me to something, and when she told me everything she had been through and everything she knew, she opened me up to a different perspective. For instance, Stewart talked a lot about how, in the United States, less than 8% of living citizens had ever served in the military. That included all the branches. Every veteran who had ever served, even for one term. Out of over 300 million people, less than 8%. It was hard for me to realize that the way I grew up, moving from post to post, trying to make new friends, trying to adapt to strangers every few years, wasn't the reality for most people. For most Americans, anyway. Less than 8%? It seemed impossible to me, that small of a number. From my great-grandfather to my dad, my uncles and cousins who were scattered across the country, except that loser uncle my brother was living with. Everyone around me wore a uniform or lived with someone who did. The world had never felt so big until Stewart and her statistics. She talked a lot during our sessions, like Tina. But unlike Tina, Stewart didn't expect me to share. I could hide behind her experiences, many of which forced me to bite back my tears. Maybe that's why her sessions went so fast. Chapter 11. The water came back on right after Stewart left. I washed the sheets and towels, and while I was waiting for my next client or a walk-in to arrive, I worked on a new playlist. Elodie managed to be busy with a client each time I finished with mine. I was dying to ask her how she knew that soldier with the strange name, but we kept missing each other. I usually didn't get involved in other people's drama. I had enough of my own. But Elodie didn't know many people here. The only other army wives she talked to were on Facebook. My next client was a sleeper. He usually conked out within 5 minutes, which left me with the entire hour to think about my brother. Oh, and how much I was dreading tonight's dinner. I was slightly envious of Austin for being so far away in South Carolina, sleeping past noon and working part-time at Kmart. I also thought about Elodie's friend, how he wore pants throughout his treatment, and how the amount of tension he held in his body wasn't healthy for such a young guy. He couldn't have been older than 22, if that. My last client of the day was a walk-in who left me a big tip for a 30-minute prenatal massage. Her belly was so full and she seemed so tired. I almost asked her if she was okay, but I didn't want to be rude. I walked by Elodie's room again. The door was closed, and for a second, I even imagined that her soldier friend might be in the room with her. My imagination sure ran wild. Before I went home, I helped Molly restock the back room and the towel warmers, and folded the laundry. I wasn't in a rush to get home, especially on so-called family dinner night. When I finally left for the day, I took Molly's delicious leftovers home with me. That whole thing about pregnant women eating for two might be an old wives' tale, but it was still important for Elodie to have nutritious meals. I carried the food in one hand and tried to call my brother with the other. Voicemail. Hey, it's me. I was just calling to check on you. I haven't heard from you in a few days. Call me back. I'm going to Dad's for Tuesday dinner. You suck for not being here. I hung up and put my phone in my front pocket. Around me, the sky looked like the sun couldn't decide to set or not, staying an orange color that made everything look just a little nicer. The parking spots in the alley were all full. Bradley's white truck was there, parked sideways, taking up two spots, and the truck bed was so full of mattresses it reminded me of that fairy tale about the princess and the pea. He walked out the back door and tossed a pillow into the pile.
Water's back,
he shouted, waving his hand. Yeah, I said, smiling. Thanks for being on the water company, I added. Okay, that was awkward. I could feel it, and I knew that conversation would mull over inside my head later tonight. My brain usually worked that way. Bradley didn't seem to notice or overthink my words the way I did. He just told me to have a good night, locked the door to his shop, and climbed inside his truck. Doors slammed, tires crunched over branches, and voices filled the rest of my short walk home. I thought about dinner tonight, and what forced conversation we would have during at least three courses. I had to be at my dad's by 7, which meant I had to be ready to leave my house by 6:40. I needed to shower and put actual clothes on, even if I was just giving my appearance minimal effort. My dad's wife had stopped commenting on my looks once I lost enough extra pounds to please her. Small mercies, I guess. I really wanted to stay home and eat leftovers with Elodie. I'd had variations of that same thought every single week since I moved out. I thought it would go away, that I'd get used to the routine. But nope, I hadn't and didn't think I ever would. Sure, dinner once a week was better than living there, by far. But I hated the task of it. Hated that my entire week revolved around Tuesday at 7. When I did my laundry, when I washed my hair, when I could work. It all revolved around this dinner. I guess I wasn't as much of a grown-up as I thought. Chapter 12. I was starting to hate Facebook. Every single time I opened the app, there was either a newborn baby, a proposal, or a death. If it wasn't that, it was politics, with everyone shouting so loudly they couldn't hear what the other was saying. The whole thing was exhausting, and I had barely posted anything in months. I never felt like I had anything to share with people I hardly knew. And unlike Sarah Chessman, who had moved away my senior year, I didn't feel like every crockpot meal or selfie was social media worthy. But out of slightly bitchy curiosity, and because I had another few minutes to waste on my walk home, I went to Sarah Chessman's page to scroll through her boring life. Maybe it was the fact that I was walking through the noisy alley and my feet hurt like hell, or that I'd be knocking on my dad's door in an hour. But Sarah's life actually looked okay today. She had a husband, a newly minted soldier stationed in Texas, and she was pregnant. I watched a 10-second video of her opening a box full of pink balloons, revealing the gender of her upcoming baby. She didn't look terrified the way I would if I were her. I started to feel like a hypocrite for judging her, so I clicked back to my main feed. My dad had posted a picture of himself holding a fish in one hand and a beer in the other. He loved to hunt and fish. My brother and I couldn't stomach it. Austin more than me. He would go on hunting trips with Dad until we got to high school and started dating. My brother, who I had talked to every day up until a few months ago, but now could barely get on the phone, had already liked my dad's post. So did someone with a golden retriever as their profile picture. The golden retriever friend had commented that my dad was looking happier than ever. It stung. It really stung. I had been hearing that phrase since he got remarried 3 years ago. From the neighbors to the cashiers at the PX, everyone thought it was okay to congratulate my dad on how happy he was. No one seemed to consider that I might be in earshot, that telling him how happy he was now implied that he had been really unhappy before. No one seemed to consider me. That's when I started clinging to people, boys mostly. Some at my high school, some older. I was searching for something I wasn't getting at home, but I couldn't tell you what it was. Mostly I clung to Austin. Maybe it was the twin thing. Maybe it was the fact that our parents were never around when we needed them most, when their guidance would have mattered. Staying close to my 6 minutes younger brother seemed to help for a while. But once we were out of high school, I started to consider that maybe Austin wasn't the person I had built him up to be. One of the weirdest parts about growing up was the way memories changed. Like when Austin took me to that party in Chesapeake Manor, where all the officers' kids were partying. He told me that everyone our age was drinking, that I should just relax. Then he passed out in one of the bedrooms with some girl from a high school across town, and I was forced to sleep there, surrounded by loud, belligerent boys. That's when one of them, the one who called me Austin's sister, and had too deep a voice for a high school kid, swore I had a crush on him and shoved his tongue down my throat, repeatedly, until I started crying and he got weirded out. Funny how my telling him to stop, my constant, no, 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 please, no, didn't do it. Nope. It was the salty, hot tears streaming down my face that finally got him to go away. Eventually, I fell asleep on a couch listening to some war video game being played in the other room. Austin never apologized the next morning. He never asked how I had slept or where. He just kissed that random girl on the cheek and made a joke that she and I both laughed at. And then we Ubered home like nothing ever happened. Our dad yelled at me, not him. and we both got grounded for a week. I clicked on Austin's profile and thought about calling him again, but then Elodie opened the front door and surprised me. I hadn't even realized I was on my front porch. Chapter 13. My house is small, so when you go through the front door, you're already in the living room. That's one of the things I liked about it, the way it was all cozy and warm, everything there waiting. The lights and TV were on when I got home that night, the room filled with the voice of Olivia Pope, and there was Elodie, standing at the door, greeting me with a nervous smile. Something was up. I hadn't known Elodie that long, but I felt I knew her well. I'm not sure how much we had in common other than being the same age. And even that, well, I felt older somehow. I looked older, too. Elodie had this way about her that made her appear younger than she was, especially when she smiled. And when she was nervous or sad, she looked about 16. Younger, even. That brought out the protector in me. Elodie tried her best to be the perfect young army wife, but she was already at the center of so many petty rumors. The wives in Philip's platoon made little jokes about her accent and called her a mail-order bride. She was hardly the only one. Tons of soldiers met their wives online, but that didn't seem to matter to these women. Maybe they should talk to Stuart. I bet she had some statistics about how many members of the military met their spouses on sites like Military Cupid. Anyway, that's how a lot of military posts were. Everyone bickering and jostling for position. Elodie's neighbors were bitches who spent their days selling pyramid schemes on Facebook and bullying her over her grass being an inch too long. That's not an exaggeration. I was with her once when the mayor of her housing department pulled up, tires screeching, and scolded Elodie for letting her grass grow half an inch too long. Yes, the mayor measured. No, she didn't have anything better to do. That's why Elodie preferred to spend her nights on my couch, or in my bed, depending on where she fell asleep. I got the feeling she liked the couch the most. She didn't wake up asking for Philip when she was on the couch. I planned on asking Elodie about the guy from earlier. Obviously, she knew him. But how? She didn't have many friends, as far as I was aware, and she didn't spend much time socializing. Maybe Philip had buddies outside of his platoon. It wasn't too common, but it wasn't impossible either. Elodie sat down on the couch and tucked her feet under her. Her petite body was changing, her belly starting to swell. I wondered where the baby would sleep in my little house. Elodie's favorite American show at the moment was Scandal. She was binge-watching it for the first time. "What season are you on now?" I asked her.
"2," she said softly. She was being so quiet.
I pulled my shoes off, and it wasn't until I dropped one on the floor and something moved in my peripheral vision that I realized another person was in my house. A noise, a little like a shriek, flew from my mouth when I saw him. He was staring at me, the one-syllable client from earlier. He was sitting in my chair, the dark pink, used-to-be red one that my Nana gave me before we moved to Georgia. "Hey," I said, when my heart stopped doing little flip-flops from the aftershock of surprise. How did I not see a whole human in my living room? I had been feeling spacey a lot the last few weeks, but that day was another level.
"How was work?"
Elodie asked, looking at the TV while her fingers picked at the fabric on her pants, and then back to me.
"Good."
I stared at this kale guy, and he stared back at me. When I would recall this later, the first time he was inside my little white house, the memory would change from a burning pain to pure bliss and back, again and again and again. But when it happened in real life, it happened fast. Before he was anything to me, before he was everything, he was just a quiet stranger with a blank face and distant eyes. There was something indomitable about him, something so closed that I couldn't even begin to make up a life for him. He hated peppermint oil and hadn't wanted me to touch his leg. Those were the only clues I had to who he was. I smelled the popcorn right before the popping actually started.
"I'm making popcorn,"
Elodie announced. She was nervous. What was going on here? Okay, I started. I'm going to take a shower. I have to be at my dad's at 7. I walked down the hallway. Elodie followed, chewing on her bottom lip. Well? I asked.
He just got home last night. He was with Philip.
Her voice was low, and I could tell she was gearing herself up to ask me something. My mom was like this too, when she wanted something.
Can he stay here for a day until he can get a hold of his...
She trailed off, stopping for a second.
Until he can get into his place. Sorry to ask like this. I
held up my hand. How do you know this guy? I wanted to make sure this was on the up and up.
Oh, I met him right before they left. He's a good guy, Karina. Honest. He's Philip's closest friend over there.
What's he doing back? I asked her. She shook her head.
I didn't ask. Should I ask?
She peered into the living room. I wouldn't, I told her. He can stay here, but if he ends up being a creep, he's out. So are you, I teased her. She smiled at that and touched my arm. She was always so affectionate. Me, not so much.
Thank you, Yorze.
I know, I'm the best. Now I have to shower so I'm not late to my dad's. She rolled her eyes.
Yeah, you should thank me.
We both laughed and I shut the bathroom door in her face. Chapter 14. My little house was in dire need of a few-ish repairs. It had been that way since I'd moved in a few months ago. Every day it was the same dance, bouncing from foot to foot on the cold tile, completely naked, waiting for the water to heat up. That wasn't even the worst of it. Once the water got hot, it didn't stay that way. Not for long, anyway. The water went from hot to cold to hot again. I could barely stand it. I loved my slightly shabby little house, but there were a lot of things that needed fixing, and it was going to take a while to get through them all. I tried some of the smaller renovations myself, like the shower tiles I bought during an over-adventurous Saturday afternoon at Home Depot. I bought cans of paint, little tubes of white gunk to patch the holes in the hallway walls, some knobs to replace the ones on the kitchen cabinets, and some tiles for the bathroom. The knobs found their way onto the cabinets. I had to admit they really did update the cabinetry. Just like